I want to try to leave a little bit more space tonight for some inquiry. Inquiry means different things to different people. What I mean by the word is inquiry is a process that's very much like, if not in a way identical with meditation. The difference is that in inquiry, we're often exchanging with another person and words are being used. But the exchange is meditative. When we're sitting in meditation, we can sometimes feel a quality of in-touchness that dissipates some or maybe dissipates a lot when we're doing other things, when we're more active. We can feel more, we can sense more. You know, we could say, I'm more in touch. That in-touchness, when brought into a, you might say, conversation or relational process, is very powerful. There is a way of, you could say, being with yourself, where you speak about your experience as it's happening. In other words, they used the term back in the 60s for this, in the field of Gestalt therapy, which is a kind of psychotherapy. They called it flow of awareness, where you're speaking about your experience as it's happening. It's a very connected thing. It doesn't mean you have to be emotional. You could be very much in touch with the thoughts as they're arising and expressing them. But you could say you're right there in that connectedness. And then we feel what it's like to not be that connected, so to speak. You follow what I'm saying? Does it make any sense? And when that kind of connection, when that kind of, you might say, intimacy or vulnerability is brought to an inquiry, it's very interesting, it's very powerful. It's kind of like what it's like to sit with people, and when someone really starts talking from a place of truth, everyone tends to recognize that. It's a feeling of resonance. And it could be any kind of truth. It could be a very personal truth about something that happened to that person, something that they went through, something that they're currently going through. It's not a news report. It's very alive, very engaged, and very, in a way, evocative. So I just put that out as a possibility. A number of us shared a good number of us, in fact, shared a one-day meditation this past Saturday. Quite nice, as they often are. Goes by very fast. Except when it's not going by fast. It's kind of like life. Goes by fast until it's not. And that changes again, changes again, changes again. I've been pointing over the last few weeks here in different ways at awareness itself. It's a critical shift in our, you might say, possibility of awakening. When I speak about awakening, I'm not so much talking about getting more in touch with, you know, the body, or getting more in touch with the emotions, or getting more in touch with, my preferences, and getting more in touch with beliefs and these kinds of things, although that's an interesting kind of exploration. I'm talking about the shift that's possible for all of us into that which allows a deeper and deeper recognition of what we really are. And that you might say, shift, in part, happens to recognizing, relatively speaking, what we're not. Another way to say that is that as one begins to recognize what awareness itself is, that is a portal, or a door, or a gate, to begin to actually answer the question, Who am I? It's not accurate. It's confused and not true that there are different levels of awareness. There are not levels of awareness. There's one awareness experienced by different people in different ways at different times. And those so-called differences is what human beings in their mind are talking about when they talk about levels of awareness. For example, notice this in the room right now. Notice that there is awareness, and that one of its capacities or functions is to recognize what's happening. The fact that awareness is recognizing what's happening doesn't automatically mean that awareness is being recognized. You see this? Recognizing what's happening, for many people, would be called ordinary awareness. And in ordinary awareness, which we utilize to do our day and do our job and talk to people and drive here and go there and go through our day, if you ask somebody, what are you doing? They'll often tell you, well, I'm doing such and such and so and so. What are you doing next? What did you do yesterday? You'll get a report. Were you aware? Oh, yes, I was aware. What were you aware of? And they'll give you a pretty clear, and we pretty much would say, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, right for now, let's just call that ordinary daily awareness. It's a kind of awareness. Clear? Inside that, it's a good way to say it, inside that all the time is the potential for meditative awareness. And the difference between ordinary awareness, as I'm describing it, and meditative awareness is that meditative awareness has no bias in it. It has no judgment in it. It has no comparison in it. And if bias, judgment, comparison, evaluations are arising, meditative awareness sees these things. So that means meditative awareness has no prejudice. It doesn't take sides. It's neutral. See if you can recognize this right now, that meditative awareness for your whole life has been hanging out more or less distinguished or not distinguished from ordinary awareness. For example, you're doing something, let's say, if you're raising children, or you're doing something in your job, and you're interacting with other people, and differences of view, differences of opinion, differences of how we should do this arise. And we see how human beings will take positions, right? They'll take sides. And sometimes it even gets very heated, and disagreements arise. This is not the right way to do this. We should be doing this. Still awareness there. But there's a process that's being taken up as well that's actually charged. These charges, more or less, dissipate or are observed for what they are in meditative awareness without being interfered with. That's the key feature. Meditative awareness doesn't take sides and it doesn't interfere. Liking, disliking, I spoke about that a couple weeks ago, the liking, disliking tendency in ordinary awareness is often operating in such a way that that human being is being pulled by those forces. They're being pulled by their opinions. And I'm not saying this is right or wrong, I'm just saying it happens. Meditative awareness opens that up, so that those so-called opinions or positions loosen. And because they're loosened, they don't impale. They don't influence. That energy, that actual energy of those parts of the mind is more free to just unfold. And for most human beings, this feels very freeing. It feels very liberating. Because another thing that happens, and these are just words now, but the other thing that happens with the recognition of meditative awareness is you actually begin to see that awareness, meditative awareness, is choiceless. It doesn't make choices. And so what it feels like is that this awareness allows things to be as they are. If we talk about being able to see life as it really is, to see things as they are, how does that actually happen? If one can't just take the leap and suddenly, miraculously, mysteriously begin to recognize things as they really are, because if you don't recognize things as they really are, then you're either aligning with this and not aligning with that, and that process just unfolds itself. That's conditioning. Emotions are driving the human being in different directions. They're pleasant, they're unpleasant. And honestly, isn't it true that no matter how nice, organized, together your life is, the mind, the emotions, go up and down? We all in agreement? There isn't a day that goes like this. Now, you might have days that just go, and then some days are, some of these go, and one wonders, am I coming up again? Whatever goes up or down must come up, right? But we forget about that. I'm in a trough. And somebody telling me that everything changes doesn't cut it. Because this isn't changing. It doesn't feel like it. I haven't seen it yet. I'm stuck. What meditative awareness does, literally, what it actually does experientially, is it diminishes suffering. It diminishes the effects of the ups and downs in two specific ways. The severity of the down, the severity of whatever difficulty, you don't have to call it a down, is lessened. The severity of the down or the difficulty is lessened, and the duration is lessened. Whether that storm be an emotional storm, a storm of cognition mixed with emotion, or, let's go with this one, because as these bodies age, they tend to give human beings more trouble. Not always. Some people have a stroke, and they really are just not okay. You can see that they are very distressed. And other people have a stroke and they're laughing about it. They seem to be fine. People have, you know, the leg doesn't work right anymore. It's not really going to repair. It's going to continue to be difficulty, and they're laughing about it. And other people, it's really, really a misery. Meditative awareness diminishes the severity of the difficulty, and it diminishes the duration that it impales the human's ease, peace. Embedded in meditative awareness is a third type of awareness. I hope you can see this. If you want to, like, if your mind likes to do things spatially, okay, my hope is that this is going like this, not like this. Because if life gets better up here, then you're going to be threatened by what's down there. And in the Sufi tradition, the mystical school of Islam, before they did any practices of, you might say, raising energy or going up, they went down. They went into the shadow. They went into the issues. They went down into the complexes. They went into the darkness. And then they started to let that darkness wake up more fully into the light. So embedded in meditative awareness, there's a third aspect or type. And someone actually described this today. I was talking to someone. And she actually used the word. She didn't really recognize it in the way I'm talking about it right now. But she said, I had this opening. And I want to try to talk about what it was like. So I said, okay. And she said, I don't know how to describe it, except it was an experience of pure awareness. Where life, what it was, right then and there, was so compelling, it was so engaged, it was so full, it was so complete, it was so aha, that everything else that I thought life was about was neutralized or irrelevant. And she said, it was like a moment of pure awareness. I said, it sounds very interesting. What I mean by pure awareness is that even in meditative awareness, coming and going, and sometimes it's fixated upon a little more or a little less, there's a sense that I am aware. I am in here and I am meditatively aware. Or this is nice to be able to watch like this, to not be hooked by things. This is lovely. I am not hooked. I am not affected. I am free. I am peaceful. I am at ease. There's actually, in meditative awareness, in most cases, there's an identification with awareness. I am aware. That I that is aware is actually a thought that comes and goes. As that thought is recognized, as that identification with awareness is recognized, what happens to it is that it begins to be seen through. Not just seen, but seen through. What do I mean by that? What it means to see through is to not just see that there's a finger, but to see that this finger is empty of solidity. Now, we can't actually look through our fingers. We can look through cheesecloth, and we can focus more on the light coming through the cheesecloth than the actual fibers of so-called cheesecloth. We can see that it's porous. What happens in this seeing through as opposed to seeing? People say, are you in touch with your feelings? Yeah, I see my feelings. To see through the feelings means to see that the feeling, the thought, in this case, I am aware, thought, is empty. It's porous. It's not solid. And as that happens, as that identification with awareness is recognized as simply and only and ever a thought that comes and goes, and it's recognized the nature of that thought is empty, like all other thoughts, they come and they go. That is not who I am. It can't be. Because if it was who I am, then I came and I went. Something is here. It's not a thing. Watching this awareness. And so what happens then is that sense of identification with awareness softens like a tight muscle that one didn't even know one had. You ever notice that? Sometimes, you know, when you get a massage, let's say, and the person goes to the spot, and you're like, oh, damn. And recognize that was tight. In that same kind of way, that tight muscle, and it's in here. That is the, you could say, effect of believing, not just in a restrictive way, in a narrowed way, that you are particular things, singularly, This is what drives people crazy, is when they identify with particular things. They take opinions and positions and beliefs about particular things, and it's against other things. This is what generates all the friction in life, in a way. It's not just that, but the identification with awareness itself is another very subtle kind of knot or contraction in this. Notice how the idea that you're the body comes and goes, right? Sometimes it feels like you're more the body, sometimes it feels like you're not the body. You don't have to leave the body. You don't have to have an experience of levitating out of your body to see that you're not your body exclusively. The identification with the body is predicated on this more subtle and pervasive identification, which is the identification with awareness. And so as that loosens, as that softens, and you can't make that happen, because that would be just somebody trying with tension to make some other kind of tension go away. What awareness does, like a light that doesn't discriminate, notice that? You ever imagine like you're the sun? I used to do this as a kid. I'd imagine I was the sun and I was shining on the world. And I'd reflect on that and I'd go, man, I'm shining everywhere. 24/7, 360, nonstop. And I didn't at the time have the word in my mind. That's what it means to have no prejudice, no bias, no discrimination. Shining continually in all directions. Have these little bubbles of activity that come out of the brain. Think about things. But that's, in a way, like awareness. Awareness shines without discrimination. Now, here's the real piece that I'll conclude this little bit with. What happens when this identification with awareness loosens is that the apparent separation between awareness and all that's happening, life, softens. And the more that identification with awareness is recognized as simply and only a thought, an idea, what I'm saying right now is that the root of the perception of duality, of separation, that which actually is at, you could say, the cause or root level of suffering for humans, and it's what everyone is attempting to relieve, whether they're doing it successfully or not, through any pursuit that they're going after, regardless of how effective it is. The criminal believes he needs to rob the bank because he's going to get something that he needs. It's going to bring him to a place where he's relieved of his desire or his compulsion to have this thing. And across the board, even all aspects of the addictive mind, right up to someone who's meditating, their life is very balanced, they're sitting with this very subtle process of looking at what is this I that identifies with awareness. What pure awareness actually is it's recognized that awareness and that we call the world is inseparable. The only thing that actually apparently, keyword, divides awareness from experience or the world is the identification with awareness itself, or an outgrowth from that, which is the identification with experiences. Because no experience is going to be identified with. What I mean by that is fixated upon, held, grasped, tried to find security within. No experience is going to operate like that for humans unless there's an identification with awareness first underneath it. And what I'm describing to you, okay, didn't come out of a book. It was never read. It happened. It was realized, and as it was recognized or realized repeatedly, I could then articulate it, like I'm doing now. if you consider this, why would that which is functioning spontaneously, effortlessly, naturally open, unbiased, unprejudiced, inherently caring and compassionate, why would that need to be identified with? And the answer is, because of ignorance. And so if we then try to go into some, then why ignorance? Where does this ignorance come from? We're going to have a hard time getting anywhere. It is or it isn't. That's enough. Is any pursuit to intellectually understand where does ignorance come from? Why is there ignorance? Or why is there suffering in this world? Would really only be a line of questioning to attempt to alleviate the angst, would it not? Unless you just want to run around in intellectual curiosities. A much more direct and immediate way to deal with the angst of life is to truly recognize, realize its source. And if you begin to experientially, energetically recognize this energy of grasping, clinging, or resisting, you see that this actually is predicated or coming from or is one and the same as, better said like that, the I. This strange, weird fixation upon identification as an I or self or me. It's nothing more than a thought that comes and goes in this, what I'll now call, field or space that's aware. Because you can't pinpoint this awareness, you can't put your finger on it. It's more felt by many as a field or a space. And this field or this space, this awareness, this pure awareness, is actually unconditional. It has no conditions about it. And this is where compassion becomes incredibly, profoundly evocative. I made one comment about this over the one day. As this awareness is recognized, what happens is that this compassion that's allowing this world to be caringly, it's a shift from just seeing life as it is to literally and directly feeling life as it is. And this feeling life as it is interconnects. It's what Thich Nhat Hanh calls interbeing. And some folks actually have this opening that I'm describing that is flavored or stylized a little bit more along the lines of what we might describe as an opening of compassion. And others might describe it as an opening of awareness. But what I'm suggesting to you right now is that awareness and compassion are absolutely and utterly identical. This isn't someone being compassionate. This isn't someone practicing compassion, trying to be caring. These things are all fine. It's fine to try to be caring, especially if you're struggling with something else that might be attempting to inhibit your ability to care. We're talking about something that organically opens, revealing in that opening the nature of this world, that you, as you truly are inseparable from. And what I'm talking about now, again, is the same thing I said before. Awareness and the world. Awareness and experience are inseparable. The only thing that appears to divide them is an I that jumps right in between and says, I am in here, being aware. Or I'm in here not being aware, because if you're going to have I'm aware, then there's going to be moments when I'm not aware, right? I can't sustain being aware. It certainly doesn't in deep sleep. what happens to the eye in deep sleep. It's no more. It beautifully, wonderfully, peacefully, effortlessly dissolves. And then it appears again, in most cases, with the first thought in the morning, although sometimes that thought arises and there's no I in the thought. That's a very fascinating moment. The first waking moment out of deep sleep. It's not so easily recognized if you come from deep sleep to dream and then into the waking state. Because in the dream state, oftentimes, there's degrees of ordinary awareness and meditative awareness, depending on how lucid the dream is. When I talk about lucidity, what I mean is that the experiences that are happening are unfolding without being interfered with. Think about this a little bit more carefully. Does the leaf on the tree that's being blown by the wind with the sun shining on it have a sense of self that separates itself from the stem, from the branch, from the light, from the sky? And the answer seems to be absolutely no, it does not. But we can't prove this, can we? I mean, even the American Indians talked about rocks are sentient beings. They feel. See if there's anything that I said that needs to be responded to before we do a short meditation, to see if we can sense, see, or perhaps see through a little bit together. Good to go? Good to go? Could say a bunch of other things. Let me stop. Let's sit again. Just take a comfortable posture. It's going to be relatively short. So get a good meditative alignment. Just recognize what's happening. Sound of the rain. Sound of the voice. Body sensations. Breathing. Thinking. If there's any confusion about these things that have been said, it's often in the thinking, it's not so much in the sensations or the sounds or the breathing. See if it's possible to recognize right now that the body sensations, That's the feelings of the body. The sounds. And the breathing. Are simply spontaneously happening. They're freely happening. And recognize what sees the sensations, what sees the breath, what sees the sounds. What is recognizing that hearing of sounds is happening? May be very subtle, but just settle into that which recognizes hearing is happening, breathing is happening, body is happening, usually there's something of a little or a more than little shift, an easing, relief. Recognizing awareness brings relief. It eases, it pacifies. The mind, the brain, the body. It lets them more fully rest. You start looking for this awareness in a particular place. Confusion has entered again. Or thinking about location has arisen. This aware presence is non-local. It's no more or less inside the body nor outside. The recognition of that which is aware, which is awareness itself. Often brings a feeling sense of peace. And notice, of course, how this awareness is silent, still, and silent. Any movement of sensation, of thought, sound, breathing is being recognized by something that isn't moving. it's strange to even attempt to talk about it. It's compelling, it's very compelling and interesting to see this which sees. Recognize how this awareness, this meditative awareness, not take sides. It simply allows. It's openness itself. And it's right here, right now. Bodies, everything that's happening, is happening within this awareness. Comings and goings, ups and downs, all of life, appears in this space of awareness. Nothing to hold on to, because awareness is what holds everything. So the last bit to simply consider it would be more accurate to say the body, mind, is sitting in awareness, rather than awareness is in the body. The body is sitting in awareness. So, no need to interrupt this consideration. I'd like to suggest you just gently, if your eyes are closed, just gently let them open again. Whether the body wants to sit still or not. eyes can be open or closed. And really the only thing that changes is visual objects are being seen or not. Body still sitting in awareness. Thoughts arising and passing in awareness. Sounds arising and passing in awareness. Nothing stiff or held here, even as the body just sits still for a little bit more. And just last but not least, before we talk a little bit again, notice the brightness of awareness. A quality of brightness or lightness. That's the nature of meditative awareness. Bright, light, free. Okay, as they say in the army, at ease.
Aunt.
Huh? Okay, may I just invite any responses? And anything that arose relative to what I said here? How you are now?
Okay, Paul, something. I hope I'm not being too
hard. To what? No, it's okay.